Well, it is so good to see many of you this morning. I mean, the many of you that are here, not many of you, and some of you I'm not happy to see. I'm happy to see all of you. But usually during the summer, we see fewer people because everybody's around traveling, doing vacation. There's even some new faces, so thank you for coming this morning. Traveling. Have you ever had this happen to you? You're driving down the road on the highway. It is a beautiful day. The weather is perfect, traffic is light, gas prices are low, everything is going perfectly, and then one word ruins everything. Detour. Oh, I hate it. You see that orange sign and you realize, oh no, everything has just gone horrible. See, usually when we have a detour, it feels like a ton of wasted time, because at the very least, now you're going to be stuck in traffic with other people on that same detour. It's not going to be something that you wanted to see. It's not going to be heading in the same direction you wanted to go necessarily. It's going to occupy some time, and it's going to feel like a waste, right? But the funny thing is, detours don't only happen on the highway. Detours happen in our daily lives, don't they? Your health takes a turn for the worst, and you're laid up in bed when you have so many projects at work you could have been doing. You find out that your company has to lay you off due to budget cutbacks. There's a death in the family, and now everything that you were hoping to do is now rearranged in order to make time for something that is a higher priority. And when I encounter detours in my life, maybe I'm the only one, but when I encounter detours in my life, I treat it kind of the same way that I find a detour on the highway. I start getting frustrated, gripping things a little tighter, gritting my teeth, and going, this is such a stinking waste of time. I get frustrated, right? Because it almost feels like that is time I'm never going to get back. That is something that is gone for eternity. Because really, we do have a limited time here on earth, right? So every moment is valuable. And when we face a detour, it seems like it is taking us a longer time to get to our ultimate destination, so much so that it might even prevent us from doing so. And maybe that's how you have felt when you were in life's waiting room. Maybe that's how you felt about this series, because it's been piecemealed together between different things, but it's what's going to hold our summer together, our cohesive series. And in this waiting room we started a few weeks ago, we enter into the waiting room of life, which, by the way, if you haven't realized, you're in a church, so we're going to talk about the Bible, and the waiting room is the Bible. And in this waiting room, we can read the Bible, and we can read the stories of people in the Bible and start thinking, this is the way my life should always be. It should always be the highlights of God doing wondrous miracles and working in ways that nobody else could explain other than God doing it. It should be day in, day out, God doing wonderfully great things, right? And we forget something, that the Bible is just the highlight reel of people's lives. That what is not included in the Bible is a great span of time of their life that is just the mundane, normal, typical things. That they were waiting. As we walked into this room, this waiting room, we found a leather-clad couple complaining about something they should not have eaten. Adam and Eve. We found an old man, hands worn out from years of work, long after he should have retired. Noah. We found another couple, much older than the first, holding a baby they aren't sure is going to make it. Abraham and Sarah. We found a young man in a very nice tailored suit, a man of influence, holding a wound in his chest. God dealing with our wounds in the waiting, Joseph. Well, this week, we're going to look at an old shepherd. He has a gash down his back. An old shepherd. Next week, next time we get together, we will be talking about a soldier wounded by friendly fire who is still smiling. And then in the cluster in the middle of that room, is some guys babbling like they are out of their minds. And then we walk into the waiting room. So, welcome to the waiting room. Today, let's talk about this old shepherd, someone who is going through what I will call wilderness waiting. This man went through some major detours in life. In fact, so much so that 2/3 of his life was spent waiting. By the way, on average standards, you and I will not wait nearly as long as this man ever did. The course of his life was altered by unwise and rash decisions. We know this man as Moses. This detour in Moses' life was significant. It lasted 80 years. For most of us, our life won't last 80 years. His detour was 80 years long. Between God saying, I have a job for you to do, and him realizing what that is, and eventually being commissioned to doing it, and then to actually having it fulfilled, 80 years of a detour. My guess is that during that lengthy detour, Moses must have felt like part of his life was an incredible waste of time. But actually, God used this detour to prepare Moses for his role as mediator of the Old Covenant, to work in the hearts of his people in preparing them for life in the promised land, and to display how God has designed for his people to live. So as we look into the story of Moses, the first thing we're going to see is that waiting is our spiritual workout. Waiting is our spiritual workout. This is how God prepares us for the hard work ahead of us. Anybody who has seen a bodybuilder, have you ever seen these guys? They are so muscle-bound they can't even shampoo their hair properly. Do you think they started off pumping 1,000 pounds? No. They started off with a lighter weight, and slowly, over time, they were able to build themselves up to whatever in the world kind of like Volkswagen Beetle they're pumping now at the gym. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. And that's what we see in our own spiritual life as well, that in the waiting, God is doing a workout in our life and preparing us for something coming up. We are going to be in 3 different books today: Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. So go ahead and put your finger in the opening to each one of those 3 books. We're going to be starting off in the book of Exodus, because Moses' story takes up a large portion of each of those books. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 3. The text will be up on the screen. Feel free to follow along there. If you don't have a Bible, we have one for you as a gift, so please don't leave without that today. Exodus chapter 3, starting in verse 1. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Just so you understand, we have skipped over 80 years of Moses' life already. And we'll talk about what happened in those intervening years in a moment. But why was Moses in the wilderness? Moses had been born to an enslaved people called the Hebrews in the country of Egypt, where it was, for a short time, the Pharaoh had determined he was going to kill every male under a certain age. Well, Moses was spared. His mom, in a wonderful last-ditch effort, threw him in a basket in the river, sent it down the river, and who but the Pharaoh's own daughter finds Moses and adopts him as her own son. He was being groomed to be a leader, if not the leader, of Egypt. But he found out somehow, we are not told how, but he knew that he was not Egyptian-born. He was Hebrew-born. Scripture doesn't tell us exactly how that happened, but he was nursed and raised by his own birth mother in another amazing work of God. And maybe it came from her. But when Moses was about 40 years old, he sees one of his own, his birth countrymen, a Hebrew slave, being beaten almost to death by an Egyptian slave master. And in an attempt to liberate his people, he kills that taskmaster, hoping that would begin some sort of some revolution, that it would foment rebellion amongst them. Well, as it turns out, the Hebrew people didn't take kindly to that, nor did the Egyptians. So out of fear of consequences of what he had done, Moses flees into the wilderness and for 40 years lives in self-imposed exile. 40 years in Egypt and 40 years in the wilderness, and now all of a sudden this bush is talking to him. That should be a hint. What the bush is about to say, if it's not abnormal enough that a bush is talking, it's going to be important. You want to listen. And this is when God spoke to him in this bush, starting again in verse 7 of Exodus chapter 3. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings. And I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. And God tells them, Moses, you are going to go and deliver my people. Moses had spent 40 years training to be the leader of the biggest nation in the known world, under the best teachers in the known world. Who better was prepared to lead the people of God as far as training is concerned? On top of that, Moses also had 40 years in the wilderness of Midian shepherding stubborn, stupid sheep. Who better to lead the people of God? Folks, we are stubborn and we are stupid. That's not a you thing. That's an us thing. Bible calls us sheep. And we recognize throughout the story, read it sometime if you have not, God even calls them stiff-necked people. They are stubborn. He calls them that to their face. And God had prepared Moses for everything that was about to happen. 40 years in Egypt, 40 years in Midian, and by the way, it'll be another 40 years in the wilderness where he had been wandering. He has been prepared for this. You might think of it this way. God lulls us into a false sense of normality, then surprises us with the supernatural plans that he has for us. You might think, I'm a nobody. Okay, a shepherd in the middle of nowhere. Are you more of a nobody than that? Without a country? Without a people other than his wife and a few people that live in tents? If God can do this through Moses, what do you think he can do through you? It just might take a good bit of time of waiting for God to prepare you for what he has in store for you. In your wilderness, the key isn't to seek some sort of experience. Because sometimes we look for that burning bush experience, right? Like that aha moment where we get that strong sensation, that fire inside of us. Sometimes that will not happen. The key is not to seek an experience of God. The key is to seek God in that waiting. See, we are all unique. We all have a unique role to play in God's plan for the ages. So he is going to manifest himself. I promise you that in some way, shape, or form, God is going to let you know he's talking to you. The question is, are you seeking him or are you seeking some major sign that God is letting you know? He's going to make himself known. And up until that point, he has been preparing you for whatever it is. And it's going to make more sense than you think it should. That usually we think it's just this 180-degree turn from what we're doing, and God is just saying, okay, Moses, everything that I've taught in you, everything that I've trained in you, everything you have had a passion for, everything you have had in your life, now we're just going to turn it in one direction. My people. See, when God calls you, it's not necessarily a revolutionary change in your life. It's a change in focus. And it might take 80 years to hone that focus to where it should be. When God is preparing you for a work, your life will have some sort of transformational moment that will indelibly mark your soul and serve as an anchor point for what God has ahead of you. That's what where Moses is meeting God right here at this burning bush is called Mount Horeb. And this is an anchor point for Moses. Because only to Moses did God speak for the people until we get the Ten Commandments. Thank you, Rob, for clarifying that from Sunday school this morning. See, this is a mountain that he would come to time and time again to speak with God, an anchor point in his life that will get him through 40 years of whining, griping, only eating bread and quail in the wilderness. See, whenever God calls someone in the Bible, these people also learn that God is greater than our inadequacies, our lack of experience, our talent. In fact, he intends to leave no doubt that his power and his might is the only thing that's at work when we are accomplishing what he has given us to do. He says something to Moses, "I will be with you." That's a refrain in each call, "I will be with you." Don't worry about you, don't worry about the people. I will be with you. That's all that matters. In that waiting, God is with you. God has said to Moses here, "I am not ignorant to what has been going on in Egypt for 430 years. I have heard. Their cry and their call has come up before me." Folks, when we are waiting, when we are in a detour of life, we're going to feel like we are all alone. We're going to feel like God is just not paying attention. Hello, God, do something. Have you ever been there? It's exhausting and fatiguing. But that is God saying, "Now you're hungry for me. Good. You're prepared for what I have for you. I will be with you. I have been and I will continue to be with you." See, God will work his might through whomever he chooses. That's why it's so important that he is with us, providing the strength to do all that he wants to do through them. But Moses still doesn't get it. He gives God a laundry list of excuses right in front of this burning bush. Yeah, this burning bush that's not getting consumed. And Moses is saying, "You don't understand, God. I don't have what it takes." Does a bush have the ability to talk? Or the ability to withstand fire for long periods of time? And yet Moses is saying, "God, I don't have what it takes." In fact, he includes this one that always makes me chuckle. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 10, Moses said to the Lord, "Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and tongue." He said so eloquently. And in fact, Stephen, the first martyr of the church, goes on to say that Moses was one of the most eloquent men in history. And here he is standing before God saying, God, I don't talk too good. But God says something to him. We need to pay attention to this very clearly. "Then the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak.'" Do you see what God says to Moses here? He's saying, "Moses, since the day you were conceived until today, not only have I been designing your mouth, I've been designing you to be exactly who I want you to be for this mission that I have in mind for you. All 80 years of your life have been me preparing you for this day, and it is finally here. Are you ready to go? Are you ready to charge in? Or are you just going to sit here?" And on top of that, "You won't be alone. I'm going to go with you and teach you what to say. I'm going to be with you." In the waiting, God is preparing you for the things he has prepared for you. God is preparing you for the things he has prepared for you. God is not ignoring you. God has not abandoned you. God is not trying to hurt you. Don't give up. Don't give in. Don't look back. Don't step down and don't drop out. God's plans for you are coming. Keep pressing on because he is still preparing you for what is to come. God was using the waiting in the wilderness of Midian to prepare Moses for the work ahead of him. And at the same time, he was using the wilderness of Egypt to prepare the Hebrew people. During this whole time, things are getting far worse for the Hebrew people in Egypt. The taskmasters were making the work harder, beating them more, becoming more gruesome and merciless, so that they were prepared to leave after 430 years of slavery. If they weren't already prepared to leave, now they will much less likely want to look back. We'll find out later on that they still go back and say, man, we had it good back there. What? But God is preparing in these wilderness moments of waiting. He is preparing them. And he will also use the wilderness of Sinai to prepare his people for life in the promised land. Because waiting does something more than just give us a workout. Waiting conforms our will. Waiting conforms our will. God uses the waiting to transform us from the core of who we are outward into our actions. Because sometimes we can think, in order to follow God's will, I need to do this, don't do that. Show up to church on Sunday, make sure I'm reading my Bible, you know, do all the good Christian things. But I have news for you. There are people that are doing all good Christian things that aren't Christian. There are people that on the outside, they look good, but on the inside, God calls them, Jesus calls them whited sepulchers, whitewashed tombs. Inside, they're full of dead bones. God wants to come in and clean from the inside out, from our will outward. Because when what is inside is right, what is outside will change to be what is right. Right? So that is what God is looking for here. And we're going to jump ahead to Numbers chapter 14. After an extended period of time, the first generation of Israel that left Egypt has come to the border of the land God has promised them. They send 12 spies in, and two spies coming back say, hey guys, yep, these people, they're pretty big, but our God is bigger. Let's go take it. The other 10 go, man, we're like grasshoppers in the presence of these guys. It sounds more like something out of Gulliver's Travels than a realistic account. He's saying these men are huge. And were it not for some of the things that they brought back, I would say these guys are probably making up, but it sounds like they were actually facing giants. 10 of them say, there's no way we can do this. We will be destroyed. So Israel responds in this way, Numbers chapter 14, starting in verse 1. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. They had become convinced by the scouts that they didn't stand a chance against these giants. So they determined that God is now their enemy, and their best option is to mutiny against Moses and go back to Egypt. I mean, Israel here is proving that they are not ready to follow God. They are not ready for the plans God has prepared for them. So God even threatens to wipe out the people, except for Moses, and say, Moses, he says, Moses, I will just start over with you. You followed me, you've obeyed me. Everybody else, I'm going to wipe them off the face of the earth. But Moses pleads with God to spare them for his own glory and his own name's sake. So this is what God says to Moses, starting in verse 11. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will his people despise me? Pause just for a moment. How long? That sounds an awful lot like waiting terms. Like God himself has been waiting with us. How long will his people despise me? Talking about their will there, their heart, their value of him. And how long will they not believe in me, in spite of all the things that I've done among them? I will strike them with pestilence and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. And he says later on, you know what? I will withhold that pestilence. I will not kill them, but they're not going to be able to go into that promised land. Their children can, but they won't be able to go in because they've chosen not to obey. This is probably one of the most painful truths I can give you in this series. Sometimes God hasn't given us the good things that we have been praying for and waiting for and hoping for because we are not ready. to have them yet. God is saying, this people just wants the blessings from me. They don't want me. They want the land flowing with milk and honey. But if I give it to them now, they'll just turn and say that they did it or that a false God did. These people had proven that already. At Mount Sinai, they had just gotten the law, and there they produce a golden calf, an idol, another god to worship. And God is saying, no, you missed it. I don't just want your actions. I want your heart. I want your will. God is using the waiting to transform and conform our will. Because when we are in the will of God, there's no place for complaining. Even if the wait is more than what we expected, the will of God will never make us wait longer than the grace of God can provide for us or his power can protect us. If our daily prayer is, God, your will be done, and if we walk in obedience to God's will, then what is there to complain about? See, a complaining spirit is evidence of an unsurrendered will, a will that has not been conformed and willing to obey God's will. Because this is what a complaining spirit says. God, I know better than you do. In our waiting, we seem to think, God, by now this should have been done. You haven't met my deadline. And God is saying, you clearly are not prepared for the great things I have planned for you. And that is so hard for us to accept. Here's the reality of it. We experience time in one direction, don't we? One dimension, the present. We can remember the past, and that is pretty much how we experience time. But God experiences time in three dimensions, the past, the present, and the future, all at once. He not only knows what is best given the past experiences and what has worked out in the past, he says, I know what is best because I can see the future from the beginning. So when we say, God, I don't want to wait anymore, God is saying, don't you understand? I know the best timing. That is a heart that is not surrendered and needs to be conformed to God's will. See, our time in the waiting room gives us time to adjust to the fact that when our will doesn't jive with God's, it's not his will that needs to change, but ours. See, God's will has been the same since eternity past. He's not going to edit it just because you show up on the scene. It's not the way it works. You're not that important, okay? God has his eternal plan that he has been working out since time began, and he will work out into eternity future. Now, it's not his will that needs to conform to ours, but our will that needs to conform to his. Waiting gives us the time to process that reality, that in our relationship with God, we don't get to call the shots. Waiting doesn't force God's will on us. Because otherwise, God could just immediately implant his will on us and enforce it on us. He could. But in his loving mercy, he has decided to give us time to adjust to the fact that when we follow his will, we see the benefits of doing things his way and the dire consequences of disobeying it, of doing it our way. So God tells his people, chapter 14, starting in verse 20 through 25, then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word, but truly as I live, and as all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, none of the men who have seen my glory and my signs that I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and yet have put me to the test these 10 times and have not obeyed my voice, none of them shall see the land that I swore to give to their fathers. And none of those who despise me shall see it. But my servant Caleb, who by the way was one of the faithful spies that said, yeah, they're big, our God's bigger, let's go win. Because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land into which he went, and his descendants shall possess it. In this episode, God is saying, my people will follow my will, will desire my will be conformed to my will. They would not attempt to enforce their own will. He wants his people to know his will, understand his will, delight in his will, and obey his will from the heart. That's throughout Scripture. God has said that about his will and his people. And it took some time to exhaust Israel so God would make this apparent, not only for them in that generation, but for the generations to come after them and millennia until today we are still discussing it. Sadly, for this generation, the lesson of their life would be for the generation after them. God was preparing his people by conforming their will. God uses the waiting to prepare us for the work in our lives and to conform us to his will. But we see in the story of young Israel that waiting also teaches God's way. Now, I want to be careful to clarify. Just because you are waiting does not mean this is what God is doing, so hurry up and learn the lesson. God is doing so many other things in the waiting room. There are so many options for what God is up to. The key in all of this is not, okay, God, what lesson are you teaching me? The key is, what is God up to? Because God is always up to something. But while we are waiting, we are learning God's ways. I have had, on a few occasions, the privilege of going on what's known as a wilderness trip. You go out in the middle of nowhere. And by that, I mean 70 miles from the nearest sign of civilization, which is a tar paper shack on the side of Algonquin up in Ontario. And 70 miles from civilization, you go off alone for a full day. All you have is your Bible, your journal, and a little bit of food for the day. And then it's just you and God doing business. And you know what I found? It was so nice because it was so quiet. I didn't have traffic. I didn't have radio. I didn't have any other distractions, just me and God. All the other noise was gone, but there was another problem. All of a sudden, noise started coming from somewhere else. Me. See, often in the busyness of our lives, the demands of our schedules and our agendas, our responsibilities, everything that has to be done, the kids screaming that they need breakfast, your parents saying they need you to come and help out with a house, everything else that is going on in your life, you have so much noise in your life that it's easy to miss the small whispers of God. And we could miss his voice in what he has for us. So in the wilderness, God is whispering to his people, and he is saying, this is my way. In that stillness of wilderness waiting, we have the opportunity, and seize this opportunity while you can, to just sit and be with God and hear his voice, to hear what he has to say to us. Now, I'm not talking mysticism. I'm not talking you will hear necessarily a voice audibly behind you, but God will begin to bring verses to mind. And God will begin to deal with issues in your heart and in your thinking. Those times that I've had those wilderness experiences, actually in the wilderness, God and I did some serious business. My major chapters in life, I can attribute to those days that I've taken some time just to set apart and be with God. I recommend it highly. Schedule it in your life. So it's teaching God's way, and we're picking up quickly in Deuteronomy chapter 4. Because now that second generation, after 40 years in the wilderness, they have now come again to the border where their parents had said, look, these people are too big. We can't go in. Those people, their children are now at the border. What are they going to do? Moses was able to say to them, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 1. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them, that you may live and go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples, who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call upon him? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today? He's saying everything that every lesson God has given you, all the whisperings that he has given you in the wilderness, don't lose them. During their time in the wilderness, God was teaching his people his heart, how he thought, the way he had designed for them to live. And as they came to the end of their time in the wilderness, Moses wants them to make sure that they don't lose the lessons they had learned in the wilderness. If you're in a time where nothing much is going on in your life, start writing down your thoughts, what God is working on in your heart and life. Where you struggle, write it down. Don't lose it. See, Moses is so concerned about this, not only for one generation for Israel, but for every generation after them. He instructs the people who are about to inherit the land promised nearly 500 years ago to teach the lessons God had given them in the wilderness to the generations after them. We see this in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Hear, O Israel, starting in verse 4. The Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. And catch this, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. He's saying, don't forget the lessons once you leave the wilderness of waiting. Folks, let me tell you the same thing. Don't forget the lessons of wilderness waiting. Pass them on to your children. Tell them the stories. Many of them are going to be embarrassing and hard to tell and humiliating even. But there is no richer inheritance you could give your children than the lessons you have learned in the wilderness. That was the inheritance of every Israelite, to learn what God had done for their people, for their families. When God brought them out of the land of slavery to freedom in Him, He gave them a certain celebration to remind them of these things. The celebration was one of the ways that Israel would proclaim God's works for them, to proclaim His ways, to remind themselves that they need to be conforming their will to His plan in their life. It was to be an annual celebration of the time that God delivered them, that He had prepared them after 430 years of slavery. He had prepared them now to be His people. We call this celebration Passover. This time was a memorial and a celebration of years and generations of God's preparing work in His people, that they had spent waiting and waiting and waiting. Fast forward, probably around 2,000 years, and at a specific Passover meal, somebody for whom the world had waited for millennia takes this Passover meal and He puts a whole new spin on it. Jesus Christ sitting at His last meal, the Passover meal, with His disciples. And He says, "This do in remembrance of me." He takes the Passover meal, and I'm going to ask those that are going to participate in serving the Passover meal, or the communion, to come forward. It is part of Passover, so we might as well call it both. But He is saying, I have been preparing you for this. He even goes on to say, I've been looking forward to this. In Luke chapter 22, He says, "And when the hour came, He reclined," that is Jesus, "reclined at table, and the apostles with Him. And He said to them, I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. Listen to this, for I tell you, I will not eat it until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God." He's saying, just like there has been preparation up until now for this to actually mean what we know it to mean, that His body and blood were spilled and broken for us on the cross, we are still in a time of preparation. God is still preparing you for a work. God is still conforming your will to His. God is still teaching you His ways. The fact that you are in a time of waiting simply means God is in the middle of a different lesson. Have you ever noticed something? Some of you are still in high school. Some of you were recently in high school. Some of you, it's been a couple centuries. But we all remember one thing, right? In the middle of a test, how much did the teacher talk? Silence. And the same thing happens with us. In the middle of a lesson, in the middle of the biggest time to see how you're doing with the lessons that He's been preparing you for, God may wait and be silent and say, "Do you trust me? Are you willing to obey even when I'm not there to tell you exactly what it is?" This communion is a reminder to us that God is still at work in preparing us. So, if brothers, you would stand as we come to this communion. This is not just a formality, not just something fun that we do, and it's certainly not because we need a snack after a sermon. It's important. This do in remembrance of me, Jesus said. Because guess what? He's coming back. We're still waiting. It's because he's still preparing in many, many ways. One of the, not the least of that is he's actually still calling people to himself. God, wait as long as you need to bring as many people to yourself. He is still coming back. We are still waiting. And he took the bread and he broke it. This bread is what's known as matzah. It's flat bread. No yeast. Symbol of purity. And it is pierced through many times, much like Jesus Christ was for us. And he said, this is my body, which is broken for you. He's saying, I have spent 33 years on this planet preparing for this night. I have a work to do that God has been preparing me for, that the Father has been preparing me for, and I'm about to accomplish it. Remember what I'm about to do for the ages to come.